executive session. Turn my mic back on. I'll repeat that for the sake of the tape. We'll reconvene as Board of County Commissioners for the 1:30 work session. And Administrator Krupp?
Okay, so we have scheduled for this afternoon a briefing with our representatives from the U.S. Forest Service. I'm going to first invite Rick Gruen up to the table, our County Parks and Forest Manager, and then he will then introduce our guests here. We have an hour to kind of hear from folks and answer questions and have a discussion, so go right ahead.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Thank you, Don. Very proud and pleased to have our guests and partners on the Mount Hood National Forest with us today. Laura Premick is a public information officer on the Mount Hood, and Jackie Gross next to her is our district ranger on the North Clack Ranger District, or the Clackamas River Ranger District. And Vicki Peterson, to her right, is the district ranger on the Zigzag Ranger District. So if you guys all want to come up. So what we thought we would do for you today, since the Mount Hood is a very large forest and is makes up half of our county, and it's divided into two ranger districts, I'll first give Laura a few minutes to speak, and then Vicki will talk about the happenings on the Zigzag, and Jackie will talk about all the happenings on the Clackamas River Ranger District, and then we'll take time for questions and comments. And anyway, it's a good chance for all of us to get together and know each other. So, Laura, there's a button on
here. I just want to say hello and thank you all for having us here. Maybe toward the end of the presentations, we can talk a little bit about whether you all found this useful or not, and if you'd like to do it again with any kind of, if we want to try to do this in some kind of routine way, something maybe to have in the back of your mind. And just to let you know that Clackamas County is a big part of the Mount Hood National Forest, and we really value our relationship with the county, especially law enforcement works really closely, search and rescue organizations. We've worked really closely with Rick on forest issues and Nancy Bush during fires. And there's just a nice, close relationship, and I really appreciate that. So with that, maybe we should go in alphabetical order and start with the Clackamas River Ranger District. And this is Jackie Gross, and she's the district ranger for the Clackamas River Ranger District, which is basically Highway 224 is the main drag through the district, and it's about 400,000 acres?
I believe it's closer to 440,000 acres.
So it's a pretty big district, and it's focuses a lot on timber harvesting and dispersed recreation. So I'll let Jackie take it from here.
So before we get started, how many counties are in the district? Just give me some broad brush.
I would say that Clackamas County represents the largest portion of the district. However, there are small portions of Marion County and I believe Wasco County, maybe a small portion there. So, but the vast majority is Clackamas County. And I have a map that is in the packet that was shared with all of you that was intended more for a visual aid, and I can walk you through what that map includes.
Sorry for interrupting.
No, that's okay. I saved a copy for myself. Well, anyway.
Would this be what we should be looking at here?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Just a moment, please.
So I think some of the facts and figures while Jackie's doing it, there's 1.2 million acres in Clackamas County with about 75% of that in some type of forest land use. The numbers we have is the Mount Hood is about 1.1 million acres. 545,000 of those acres are in Clackamas County. And if we look at our federal ownership, we're about 52% to 54%. Federally owned in between the BLM, which has about 90,000 acres, and the 500 and some thousand acres of the Forest Service. It does represent over half of our county in federal forest, and then we add state and local. We're pretty significant, and we add the couple hundred thousand acres of private industrial forest lands in Clackamas County. 75% of our 1.2 million acres is in some type of forest land use.
So I found my map, and thanks for your patience with me. So on this map, you can see that the county is outlined in red, and the portions that are within the county boundary and in color represent the Mount Hood National Forest land within the boundary of the county. You can see there's a green line that's separating two segments of the National Forest. The northernmost portion is the Zigzag Ranger District, and the southernmost portion is the Clackamas River Ranger District. And I'll talk a little bit about the different colors on this map and what they mean in a moment. But first, I thought, as I introduce you to the work that we do on the forest and on the Clackamas River Ranger District in particular, I did print out a copy of our Forest Service mission and motto for you, so you have a copy of that as well. And this this document that is integral to our agency really may help you in understanding our goals and objectives with land management on the forest. And I'll talk a little bit about the specific projects that we have ongoing on the Clackamas River Ranger District, but really they align very nicely with our mission and also our guiding principles. So our mission as the Forest Service is to sustain the health, the diversity, and productivity of the nation's forests and grasslands to meet the needs of present and future generations. And so with the work that we do, that is something that we're striving toward every day. On the Clackamas River Ranger District, we have had a variety of recent projects that I can share with you, and some current and forthcoming projects through which we try to achieve this larger mission of the Forest Service. And these are not the only projects that work toward that mission. We have a whole host of other projects that we're engaged in, but I would like to focus on some of the integrated resource projects that we have on the Clackamas River Ranger District and share some information with you about them. So referring back to the map that you see, we regularly, as a planning team, we look at what the existing conditions are on our landscape and try to determine whether they are desirable and in line with the desired future condition for the landscape. You may or may not know this, but the land base of the National Forest is divided into what we call land use allocations, and each of which has a unique and different management objective. So we have lands that are designated, for example, for timber production, but we also have lands that are designated for wilderness values, and we have a whole range of land allocations in between. So when we go into a new area and determine how we're going to manage that area and what the needs are, we're looking back to that guiding direction to tell us what we should be managing toward. And we look at the landscape and determine whether the existing condition is meeting those objectives. And so so on this map that you have, our current project for which we're completing the planning phase is the Hunter Project. It's the large blue area in the southeast corner of the map. And that project, I shared with you a draft decision notice that is in your packet, and it outlines the activities that we are pursuing within that project area. They are integrated in nature. We have some forest management activities that are outlined on page 3 of that document. It's the Hunter draft decision notice. And so this just provides an example of the kinds of activities that we are pursuing in this area, and these activities align with the needs that we've identified for the area. So we will be improving health, diversity, and productivity across this planning area. We plan to pursue, if you add things up, probably somewhere in the arena of 2,700 acres of commercial vegetation management to achieve our land management objectives, as well as a variety of non-commercial management activities to also improve the health, diversity, and productivity of the forest lands. I said that this work is integrated in nature, and what I mean by that is that we're looking at the needs for a variety of resource areas. So we include recreation resource specialists, watershed resource specialists, fisheries biologists, and a whole host of other resource specialists to help identify what the needs are in the area and to pursue project proposals that are going to help meet our land management objectives. And so in this particular area, we've also identified some aquatic and riparian enhancement activities that are also listed in the proposed actions. Our fisheries are particularly important on the Mount Hood National Forest. We have, we provide habitat for a variety of threatened fish species, including Chinook salmon and steelhead. And it's very important to us to make sure that whatever we're doing in a project area, we're doing it with the sensitivity of the fisheries resource in mind, as well as other resources, and actually looking to find out what opportunities there may be to enhance those resources. So we have, in addition to our watershed and riparian enhancement activities, we also are incorporating management of our transportation system into these projects. So we have quite an extensive road system on the Mount Hood National Forest. It's great in that it provides access for both recreation as well as vegetation management and fire response activities, but the road system is so extensive that it's exceeding our needs right now. And so as we go into a new area, we're looking at what are the transportation system needs in this particular area, and what changes can we make to bring our access needs, resource needs, and funding for transportation management all in line. So that we have some road work that is also outlined in this project. And each project that we do will be a little bit different based on the land allocations that are present. For example, in the Hunter planning area, that particular area is characterized by a whole host of different land allocations, some of which include late successional reserves, areas that are managed for late successional species, as well as riparian areas. And what you don't see on this map is the designated habitat for northern spotted owl. So that also factors into how we're managing this particular area.
Would you define late succession?
I would just call it older forests.
Old trees.
Old trees.
Thank you.
Yes. And so some species depend on young forests, and other species depend on old forests. And so northern spotted owl depend on old forest. And so we have areas that we're managing toward old forests. We have, within these areas, we have had active management in the past, and we are doing what we can within those areas to improve conditions for the spotted owl.
And you mean by active management?
Timber harvest activities.
Okay.
Yep. So,
I don't know the jargon.
No, and I...
I'm going to ask questions and learn the jargon.
I am so grateful that you asked the questions, because I am so used to the jargon that sometimes I fail to remember that I speak a code language to some people. So,
thank you.
You're welcome. So on this map, or sorry, yes, on the map, we have already completed our planning for the areas that are titled Goat, that's for the Goat Mountain area, and Grove, which is the Oak Grove area. And we are actively implementing those projects right now. The Hunter project, as I mentioned, we have a draft decision, and we are in what is called the objection phase. So we've released that to the public, and the public has a chance to comment on it and basically object to what we're doing. And then we have a 45-day period during which we can work to resolve any issues that were brought up during that objection phase. And then hopefully after that, we can sign a decision to allow us to implement the project. But our forthcoming project on the Clackamas River Ranger District is one called the North Clack Project. And it is outlined in yellow here on the map. And that area is somewhat unique in that the vast majority of that area is characterized by C1 timber emphasis area. So most of the other areas that we've been to in recent years have not been so dominated by that particular land allocation.
C1
is just the number attached to this particular area, but it identifies that the area is, the desired future condition is to manage not only for timber emphasis, but also for a whole host of other objectives. But the primary objective is the timber emphasis.
Okay. And Commissioner, you may remember that's the unit you went out and looked at when you were on tour.
Okay. So that would be where we would be looking potentially for our CLT project?
The pilot is in some portion of that area, as we've been discussing with Jackie.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm working with our interdisciplinary team to develop our purpose and need statement for this area, as well as our project proposal. And we've been at it for quite some time. We've been collecting information about the area, and we're pulling together our proposed action currently, and this needs some refining, but we're looking at, in order to maintain the health, diversity, and productivity of these forested lands, to implement something on the order of about 4,000 acres of commercial treatment within the planning area, as well as about 1,000 acres of non-commercial treatment. And then we have also taken our transportation analysis that had been done previously, and we're looking at that carefully to see what kind of changes to the road system might be in order. So in order to accommodate 4,000 acres of commercial treatment, we may need to construct some new roads, whether they're permanent or temporary roads. But likewise, we are looking at the potential to close some roads and to decommission some other roads. In addition to this, we're looking at adding large woody debris to area streams that provide habitat for resident fish species. And we're also looking to correct some damage caused by unauthorized OHV use. The North Clackamas area has an established off-highway vehicle system for off-road vehicles, and
if you said ORV, I would have had it.
but there are many user-created trails that remain on the landscape, both from past uses as well as new trails that were created illegally by users. So we have some opportunity here to close off those unauthorized trails and to rehabilitate the landscape as well. So that project, we plan to issue a scoping letter that will kick off our environmental analysis process. And that scoping letter will define our purpose and need for the activities that we've outlined, and will describe the activities in detail. And we're hoping that that will be something that we can release sometime relatively early in the new year. So as well, on the map, you'll see a large area identified as Zigzag. That would be the project area that will be on Vicki's district, and that would be the project that our interdisciplinary team would start after the North Clackamas area. So this just gives you an idea of where we've been and where we're going with our integrated planning. Any questions about that?
Actually, I just have one question, and it's a historical question. Why is there a difference between Forest Service and BLM? Does anybody know? It would just seem to me it's all federal land. So it would be all Forest Service, but maybe somebody knows the answer to that question.
I would say that's exactly it. We're unique in Oregon, and I'll let these folks talk too, but I believe Oregon is the only state in which the BLM has a Forest Service presence or a forest management presence. Most of it is mining lands, range lands, resource other than forests, but I, because of the ONC and how that was tasked to whatever the precursor, the predecessor to the BLM, Bureau of Land Management, it just kind of stayed with that. Is that how you see it?
I think that in Oregon it is unique that the BLM has so much forested land, but I think you find out throughout the United States and in the West generally that it's that the BLM does focus more on grazing and mining and recreation and that kind of thing. But the BLM is part of the Department of Interior, and the Forest Service is part of the United States Department of Agriculture, which is two different departments within the federal executive branch. So that's a big difference. So their funding and their management and the way they're organized is very different. But that's just, it's just the way traditionally the it's been the forefathers decided the way to divide things up. There have been efforts in the past to merge, to move the Forest Service into the Department of Interior, but those generally have not been successful because of the cultures of the agencies.
So the geography of the BLM is obviously substantially larger than that of the U.S. Forest Service.
Right, right. And the management, the management objectives and the way they manage land is very different as well.
So we've had a lot of fires this year. Is there any exception?
Have mic Martha, on. Turn your mic on.
Where would you mark on the map where fires were this year in the forest?
Well, I can.
You'd have to.
I can share a little bit of information with you about fires that we've had. This past year on the Mount Hood National Forest, we had 69 fires that we've determined happened over the course of the last season. 61 of those fires were human caused, so we only had 8 natural ignitions. That's somewhat unusual because on the map, if you'll see the area called Hunter, that is along the western border of the county, we call that the lightning belt, and it's an area where we usually get a lot of lightning starts. The past couple years, though, we haven't had the large storms roll through, and so we haven't had a significant number of lightning starts, but we do have a significant number of human-caused fires, and those typically occur They can occur anywhere along the road system, typically. Some of those are remnants of campfires that were, I'd probably say most of them were abandoned campfires or campfires that people thought they put out but actually didn't. We're finding that a larger number of fires seem to be starting from target shooting. So we've had at least the 36 pit fire was a result of target shooting. That was several years back.
Where was the 36 pit?
It was, I would say, along this black line, which is Highway 224, just south of that North Clackamas area. And that fire grew. It was a, while it was a human-caused fire, it was highly weather-driven, and it ended up, I think, burning approximately 5,000-plus acres. This year in Clackamas County, as far as I could tell, the largest fire that we had was the Jazz Fire, which was human-caused, we believe, and it occurred somewhere in this Hunter area. And it was approximately 50 acres in size. So, you know, all things considered, we had a relatively, it was a busy fire season, but our firefighters were very successful in their initial attack of the fires that we had.
Well, because one of the reasons I've asked this question is there seems to be a disconnect with how the Forest Service handles it and how we handle it on our own lands.
How we manage it.
How we manage it, yeah. Because one of the things I've been hearing from the AOC, Association of Oregon County, is that most of the larger fires this year started on federal land, but weren't really managed until it moved on to, you know, well, wilderness areas, essentially started on federal wilderness areas, but they were let go, and that's what caused larger conflagrations. So there's a, seems to be a policy disconnect with how fires are managed.
Well, there probably are differences in how fires are managed from agency to agency and jurisdiction. But on the Mount Hood National Forest, we do have a very aggressive initial attack approach. So the thing that is challenging for us many times, though, in our fire response efforts is where the fire starts. Sometimes those areas are very dangerous to put firefighters into those areas, and so firefighter safety is always our top priority. And if it's unsafe to put firefighters on the fire directly to try to suppress it, or the fire is behaving in such a way that that's not safe, then we, as a you know matter of course, have to back off. So we do generally have a very strong initial attack, but there are instances where it's just not safe.
So the what we've heard, well, I've been a commissioner for 7 years, and we hear from different parts of the state and the counties, is that the, and here in Clackamas, that the way it's, well, not fires are managed, but the way the forest is managed somehow subjects maybe the Forest Service land to be more vulnerable to a devastating fire than a forest area that is thinned out more regularly. I don't know the lingo as well as
fire borrowing.
Yeah, but so I see this in your page 3 here where it says thinning. I presume you're hauling out that debris and that brush. Are we actually, is there a truth to that from your standpoint? Do you feel that there's some validity to that comparison? Because I think the U.S. Forest Service is being somewhat thrown under the bus at times with that, in that regard. So I was wondering if you could speak to that.
I just want to look at, so the thinning activities that are described here, while their underlying goal isn't necessarily fuels reduction per se, they do have the impact of reducing fuels on the landscape. And anytime you're doing thinning, you are taking out material from the forest that could potentially burn. So thinning definitely is a means of reducing fire risk on the landscape. However, you know, one of the things in our mission statement, in our guiding principles, states that we follow laws, regulations, executive direction, and congressional intent. And the way that we manage our forest is in line with the laws and regulations that govern how we are to manage the forest. So there are, you know, we have specific objectives to provide for soil quality, for example, that requires us to leave a certain amount of material on the forest floor. And so we try to strike a balance. In fact, we've had some recent field visits with our team to go look at the material that we're leaving behind even after we have thinned an area to see, are we leaving too much? Is this truly a problem? And we've come to the conclusion that there may be a short-term increase in the potential for a surface fire as a result of the material that's on the ground, but that fades over the years, and that the resource benefit to providing that for soil nutrient cycling is, you know, it's in line with our direction, and it's a worthy endeavor. So I think also on that point, as I mentioned earlier, our forest is zoned with different land allocations, each of which has a different objective. And so that doesn't allow us to necessarily treat all the acres the same. And so, for example, in the late successional forest reserves, we may conduct a treatment, but the overarching goal of that treatment is to accelerate achievement of the conditions of an old growth forest. So an active thinning program that achieves a large fuels reduction objective is not something that we could necessarily pursue in that area without amending our forest plan and trying to make sure that we're doing it in the right fashion. So I don't know if that helps out, but definitely the management direction that we have for particular areas is something that influences our ability to reduce fuels on the landscape.
So let me see if I get this. If you want to create old growth forest, it would suggest to me that you would leave more slash on the ground. If you're thinning to create a grazing area for deer and elk, it strikes me that you would remove more of the slash. Am I essentially on track with what I'm saying?
Yes, that makes sense, because you would want the forbs and other plants that are going to provide that forage to deer and elk to have a better chance of growing on the landscape. And so if you have too much slash, you may be inhibiting that growth.
Okay.
So
I don't want to break up the exchange here, but we have Vicki Peterson here, who's the ranger for the Zigzag Ranger District, and she would like to talk to you a little bit about what's going on her district and some of the things that you may be interested in there. And we only have an hour, and so I don't want to go over, want to respect the time, but I also want to give Vicki a chance to talk with you.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. That's okay. First thing I wanted to just bring you up to speed on, I know Cooperspur Government Camp Land Exchange is one of the items that was shared with us, and the forest is on track. The appraisal for the two, or the private estate and the federal estate, has been completed. That was done the end of October, beginning of November. We're now working on agreement of exchange as to which lands, now that the appraisals are complete, we can actually come up with the parcels that will be indeed exchanged. And we are also finalizing the EIS and environmental impact study. That will be out in January for public comment. And then we're looking, I believe, at June to actually have that finalized. And then August, the transaction should be in place. So all things are moving ahead as planned. There was a clarification act submitted by the proponent, but it was never passed by the Senate and Congress. So that had to do with trail widths and the conservation easement for the wetlands. So we're going along with the original legislation.
Because this has been going on since 2003 and before, if I remember.
There was
the initial efforts were...
Initial effort, I think, really before the Forest Service. 2009 is when it was legislated.
Okay.
And the Forest Service has been moving ahead.
So it was 2009 when it was legislated. And at one point, there was problems because of the appraisal, because it wasn't meeting GAO standards.
That may have been the earlier... This was the only appraisal that's been done by the federal government, which is part of the land exchange requirement.
Do you remember that?
I think we all have issues at times with the appraisal process that the federal government has to use. The federal yellow book appraisal, I think, is might be what you referenced. Yeah. So.
But it was a holdup with Senator, not Merkley, but Wyden.
I believe, yeah.
I think
from Vicki, I think it's all passed and everything's moving forward.
It is.
Yay.
Yeah. It takes a while.
Yeah.
I could have been. Maybe that was, Hunchback, that might have been involved with it too. I remember.
It's Molly McKnight from our Forest Service staff.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have any more in your presentation?
That was it.
So yeah. Can you show on the map what the exchanges are? Where they're located, give or take, I'm just curious, we're playing catch up, some of us.
There's 35 out on here. Okay, that'd be 35. Okay, so there's two parcels in the government camp location.
Mm-hmm.
The major one, if you're familiar with that area, if you take the first entrance into government camp that left off of Highway 26, there's quite a bit of forest land up there, trails, cross-country ski trails. There's also the ski patrol there, and the Hoodland Fire. It's the land behind there. And then if you go into government camp and you're going up into it borders Summit Ski Area right there. And that's the smaller parcel. I'm thinking that's probably 20% of the government camp land. The other is the 80%, the larger parcel there.
So that's all in the government camp area?
Yes. And then the Cooper Spur is pretty much, if you're familiar with the little resort area, it starts in there as part of the exchange, and now the appraisal will shake things out as to what is actually exchanged at the end of the day, but that was in consideration along with the Cooper Spur ski area, and then there's a lot of the Crystal Springs watershed area and some other forest land in there. And it's about 110 acres to over 700 acres.
So essentially we're exchanging an area that could be potentially developed versus what's going to remain more of a wilderness grant for that.
So
around government camp
would be developed,
more developable, but we're exchanging, we're allowing the Cooper Spur to remain more of a wilderness designation. I just want to make sure.
And actually bordering it, part of the exchange is the land allocation above there will actually become wilderness as well.
Well, Vicki
has more to talk.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And then just wanted to provide you with a little handout. You know, Zigzag is really the recreation gateway to Mount Hood. We have the Timberline Lodge up there. Our trail system is heavily used. If you look at kind of like comparing just the Gifford Pinchot across the river versus Mount Hood, you know, we're within 30 minutes, 40 minutes of the Portland metro area. So we get tremendous usage there. Our visitor counts just for our Forest Service office there in Zigzag. We're nearly 40,000 people this year just through our doors right there, which is pretty remarkable. The bulk of our season, June through September, that's 76% of our visitors right there coming in every day. We're open 7 days a week during the high season, and typically from like 8 to 4:30, I think it was. And it's every day. People just coming in for basic information, where to go hiking. If you spend time up there, I will tell you, Jackie's district is my favorite, I will tell you, because I prefer a little more serenity. If you go up towards Mirror Lake corridor and all that, it is amazing how many people are there 7 days a week. And I will say, we are talking already about the impacts from Eagle Creek Fire. You know, it's a blessing and a curse, but sometimes you feel loved to death. And those trail systems up there are already at high use. And you're also bordering, the wilderness boundaries around the Zigzag District are right. They might be a half mile off of 26. And we manage those trails differently, and we want to provide the serenity and all of that. But the usage is just, I don't want to say out of control, but the demand is there, and people are just packing those trails. So we are already trying to think of alternatives, trying to refer people to other trail systems, other locations. We would actually like a little more partnership and collaboration with the county, trying to think ahead of, and the state as well. Where can we refer people to? Where can we help shift some of this burden that we think is going to come off of the gorge and keep disperse people a little more? Yeah.
So I'm looking at the map here, and Eagle Creek was a FEMA flag. So was the Mill Fire, U.S. Forest Service. 24,000 for the Mill, 48,000 for Eagle Creek. And there's just, I'm just looking at a map that shows what was officially, you know, U.S. United States Forest Service land and which was ODF land here. And what you're telling me is that because of the Eagle Creek Fire, we're probably going to see increased usage then up in the Mount Hood area that we're not necessarily prepared for, or that we should anticipate, that we should do some planning for.
And so yeah. Through collaboration and having some more referrals for folks as alternatives will serve us all well. And I think that when you're dealing with the Portland metro area, if you look at Multnomah Falls, you know, they're having to run buses out there because there's so much usage and not enough parking. So we're trying to think ahead as to how can we accommodate those folks, and I really believe it is through that partnership that we're going to be able to provide them alternative of ranges of hiking experiences and camping and all that.
Were both the Eagle Creek and the Mills Fire, do you guys know, were those human caused? Those weren't lightning strikes, were they? Those were Eagle Creek was human.
Yes, yeah. Eagle Creek was fireworks. Human, right? Yeah. And well, I don't know about the Mill Fire.
Yeah. And our other one?
Mill Fire.
Mill U.S., yeah, 811. It was a FEMA conflagration. I've got the ODF pulled together a map of all the fires throughout Oregon, and they've labeled them what was Forest Service and what was ODF, you know, Oregon Department of Forestry. And
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to understand, because we had so much burn, and that was why I asked that question earlier, between the disconnect between how ODF handles it versus U.S. Forest Service. That's been part of the conversation throughout the state with the rest of the counties, and I'm not saying it because it's not a blame thing. It's just I'm trying to understand technically. What does that really mean? Because you explained, as you said, that in some of these places, particularly in the wilderness areas, it's very difficult to get to, so there's safety issues. But what I've been hearing from the state, just so you folks are aware of it, is that they are feeling as if the lack of management in some of these forest lands by the federal forest lands actually exacerbated the fire season, and it kind of hopped lands that if they had been contained earlier on Forest Service land, it wouldn't have hopped to state land, I guess.
Yeah.
And I'm just telling you that's what's out there. That's what I keep hearing. I'm not
Oh, no, no.
I'm not taking sides either way.
I appreciate you sharing, and I'm just not versed enough to really speak to that.
Okay.
I will say that that was the number, the Eagle Creek, I believe that was the number one firefighting effort for the month of late August, September, and the Forest Service brought out pretty much every resource they had that was effective in that area. I can remember what, there were 900 personnel?
Close to 1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was very integrated between the cities, the state, federal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, I would like to give you more details.
I would just encourage you, I should somehow get you this map of the ODF fire season, because it's unfair, I have it in front of me, and you guys don't have it, it's the whole thing.
But we could, at a later point, if you, Commissioner Schrader, or the commissioners would like a briefing specifically about fire, or specifically about timber management, we could always arrange something where we could bring our staff officer for fire and aviation management to come and give a briefing specifically on fire, or we could bring our timber management specialists to come in specifically talk about that. Today, we were really gonna focus more on district activities and district events and that kind of thing.
At AOC, there are other agendas at play on occasion, and issues like how the forests are managed there may be other agendas in those criticisms. And so the more we know about what you do, how you do it, and why you do it,
more
the way you
can
do
be
it,
knowledgeable about
the better off we would be in that setting.
How I can
I do have a question, just in terms of your general policy / practice on a fire. Do you hit it as hard and fast as you can right at the beginning, or do you hit it slow and ramp up?
So,
generally
I guess
speaking,
I can take
I realize
that one.
That there are exceptions to every rule.
So we have, at any point in the season, we may be staffed up above and beyond what we normally would be, or at a regular staffing for the fire season. I'll just give an example. During the total solar eclipse, this year, we actually had additional resources in the vicinity in case there was a fire during that time. But we have, you know, with our staffing, our intent is to, provided it's safe, to put the resources that we have on the fire in the effort to put the fire out. If there's a need for additional resources, we make the call and start calling them in. So we start with our base staffing. There are times during which, with the high severity conditions, we may have additional resources on site. So that enhances our firefighting capability. And then we also have the ability to call in additional resources at any time that we need to bolster our firefighting capacity. But there are times throughout the year when our resources nationwide are stretched thin, and so it's not at the local level necessarily where we determine where the resources are going to be put, but more at a regional level that's occurring and at a national level. So we have our base staffing, and then, you know, depending on what's happening nationwide, we can pull additional resources in to help us with our firefighting capacity.
What I might suggest, because we have about, 8 minutes or so before the hour's up, so we might take you up on that offer to maybe come back and talk more, because I do have some questions around that, and you're talking about resources, which is one of my questions. Do you feel as though you're adequately staffed? Because we hear around the state over the years that maybe the Forest Service have the resources on the ground at times, and you mentioned, you know, your resources being spread thin, and I don't know how that's allocated, but I think there are some follow-up questions on that. So I don't want to eat up any more of your 8 minutes or seven or so minutes you have left, so I'm gonna, you know, give that to you if the board's okay with that.
Yeah, sure.
Just going back to zigzagging, kind of that recreation aspect, our front desk there does about $400,000 a year in sales, but that includes a lot of things. Anything from permits, passes. There are over 550 recreation residents on the district, and they're the most historic intact set within the Forest Service. And those are, we have about 30 to 40 of those sold a year. And so all those real estate transactions take place. And I'm actually very pleased to share with you that we just met with local realtors, brokers, and title company in trying to ensure we all have alignment and communicating and setting up buyers for buyers and sellers for successful transactions. But that's just an ongoing thing, that the management of that. And there's a lot that goes on with historic tracts, maintaining the significance of those. The recreation events, Zigzag is probably the hot spot for that. And probably the largest one currently is the Hood to Coast. But you have, and so I just wanted to share some numbers with you. You have about 3,000 participants in all of the rec events for 2017. And it's on your sheet there. 1,300 spectators came in for those. This year, we just had an open season, and we hope to bring on 10 more events for the forest. It's the first time we've had an open season in 5 or 6 years, and trying to bring in more activities. We are, I don't want to say it's necessarily preference, but we are trying to find organizations that are supporting youth and underrepresented groups on the forest. So there's some priority to that that have a different demographic than what we traditionally get. I would say probably over 30 to 40% of all the events that take place on the forest are running events. So we're looking for a little bit more diversity there. Outfitter and guides, I love these figures. Over 46 outfitter and guide providers and 2,100 participant days that take place. And so that could be hunting, fly fishing, hiking, mountain bike riding, all assorted elements there. And Zigzag is their destination. Over 60% of those take place on the Zigzag district. We also are doing, that 26 corridor is in high demand for infrastructure, you know, comm sites, utilities, rhododendron water, government camps, water and sewer. You know, we are very integrated with those communities there and have good working relationships with them. And we are getting short on time. I also wanted to share with you all that just yesterday, our fisheries biologist took Oregon Water and Electric Bureau, I think it is, OWEB, out for a field tour and was submitted a grant for $312,000 for stream restoration. And the Zigzag and Clackamas districts are probably the most pristine, I would say, or becoming the most pristine in the nation for salmon habitat. And I provide a few more facts and figures down below there as to that economic impact of that $312,000 will represent over $500,000 for the county and the local area. It's pretty amazing. And they were just out on that field trip for work that was done this summer. They already saw a baby coho upstream in some fish channels. So that leaves you all 4 minutes for questions.
Well, I do know that we prioritize with the stewardship, right, forestry, the culverts, but
yeah, so
in that area, it was actually all under the
over the years, the commissioners have been very supportive of our partnership with the Forest Service and our other partners within the Clackamas Stewardship Partners, where we've done on and off forest restoration activities, primarily on the Clackamas River watershed. But again, like Vicki was pointing out, you know, with her work with the Salmon River Watershed Council and Basin, we've been very fortunate to bring many millions of dollars into the county over the years for side channel restoration, fish passage, culvert replacements. A number of us went on tour recently and looked at some of the project work that was generated through the retained receipts from the which does flow not only to support projects, but the Dump Stoppers program has been a recipient for the last 4 or 5 years with some substantial funding support along with the Title II dollars. So it's been a good collaborative effort over the last 10 years.
We've done a lot.
Yes. One thing we talked about when the BLM folks were here that in the remaining time is, I think it was Commissioner Humberston was designated as kind of the commissioner liaison if the BLM folks had any, you know, political level questions or concerns to bring forward. And I think we've talked too about the need for the Forest Service to have the go-to commissioner. So at least one of the asks today, it'd be who might be the Commissioner Humberston again, or whomever, that at least from Laura's Premix or Lisa Northrup, who's our forest supervisor, who that would be the designated commissioner.
Might as well be consistent on that one.
Very good.
So I'm happy to do it.
Yeah.
Martha will help me. She's got a lot more experience at it, but I'm sure she will.
And lastly, I know you're all interested in cross-laminated timber, and we haven't really discussed that today. But I do want to continue to assure the board that we'll work with Jackie and her team to further define the pilot project on the North Clack planning area. And Commissioner Humberston and Commissioner Schrader will be involved in that, along with our partners.
Great. Well, thank you for your presentation.
Thank you for coming. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for your time today. Well, really appreciate it.
Look forward to working with you. Yeah. And I think we better behoove us to have another session on the fire piece, because if we're going to be having, if we're expecting a number of people now up on the mountain this summer, we better be prepared for it. And I would strongly suggest some kind of an education piece, because we don't want to have happen up there what happened.
We have a growing population, so I assume that will trickle out
I will tell you that worries
recreation
me.
Areas.
Would you prefer two separate sessions? You mentioned fire suppression, fire as one, and timber management as another. Would you like to see them as separate policy sessions, or try to do a half hour of each?
Do you see them as being unrelated, or?
No, they're connected. So yeah, maybe I'll work with the folks here, and we'll combine those together.
I mean, we're not going to be the experts. We're going to, you know, but we're going to be, we need at least a modicum of knowledge to discuss things with
our other colleagues,
with residents, and, yeah, and that sort of thing, and at least know who to send them to in your departments if they have questions that we can't answer, which I'm sure they will.
And I think you're finding out that not all forest acres are the same.
Yeah.
And you have those different designations of riparian and matrix and late succession. And it's, if you're not involved with it, you don't know. So you make the assumption that all acres are the same and all growth potential is the same and all habitat. So it's good to get this information out so that you're aware of it. So thank you for that opportunity.
Yeah, that was a great takeaway. Well, I did pick up on that. You have areas that are managed differently, and so your management schemes are obviously different.
Thank
well,
you,
and, and we're willing to give you the time you think you need. Maybe Carolyn and Rick and I can chat a little bit about, because it just depends on how much questions and answers you want to get into as far as timber and fire, and because, you know, it's easy to go down this path or go down that path, and just depends on how disciplined you want to be, you know, to fire for this amount of time and timber this amount of time, and how deeply into the woods you would want to get as far as a teaching session, or do you want it to be more discussion based? And so we'll just need to talk a little bit about
and
that.
I like that, the versus the weeds, the woods versus the weeds.
Yeah. And you know, we can come to you too. I mean, we could do that. We can take another road trip.
Yeah, it's
either
nice
way
to get out of here. So
okay, we'll work on it.
All right.
Thank you all.
Thanks again.
Take a couple minutes.
Sure. We'll take a short 2-minute recess.